Hey everyone, Rob B here with Rob D, and you are listening to the Property Podcast. And it's a bumper market update this month. Wow, so much has happened. We've got the spring statement to discuss. We've got interest rate rises. We've got huge inflation levels. We've got the housing market kicking on. We've got the rental market kicking on. And a big piece of news that nobody has talked about, yet it could change everything for the UK property market. All that and loads more coming up this week.
Yes, thank you for joining us on the Property Podcast. This is the show where we share for free the knowledge that we've gained over the years as investors in putting deals together for clients and now advising a multi-million pound property fund, which you can find out more about at portfolio.co.uk. And of course, as part of doing all that, we follow the news very closely. And in Market Update, we love to round up all the main stories for you. And as Rob's already said, so much going on in the last month, including this story that's so technical, it didn't actually make the press. We had to go and dig it out from elsewhere. But as you'll find out, it is very significant. So we'll be getting to that in just a moment.
Before we get into all these exciting news stories, just a heads up. If you like looking at gorgeous properties, then we have got the ultimate Instagram handle for you. No, not the Property Hub handle for Instagram, although you should be already following Property Hub on Instagram because it's awesome. Loads of education there. That's Property Hub UK. But where I want to direct your attention to this morning, particularly if you're on your phone, is go to Instagram and head over to Portfolio Investors. And why am I sending you there? Because we've got some incredible videos of properties that feature in the Portfolio app. So if you want a sneak peek into what is inside the Portfolio app, this is the place to go. And they are stunning. Like the properties that we have in the Portfolio app are beautiful. So go and check them out. It's just property porn. If you want to use Portfolio, amazing. But let's face it, we all love beautiful properties. We all love looking at stunning properties. So go and check that handle out. It's at Portfolio Investors on Instagram. Go and check out some of those videos. Give it a follow, and then you'll get all the other updates as they come through too. And Rob, if beautiful videos of properties isn't enough, we've got an incredible announcement coming next week that I'm setting you up to talk about, but you can't actually say what it is. But it is truly incredible.
Yes, it is. That's all I can say. I just have to agree with you because we can't give any more details to this, but this is not going to be one of our long drawn out teasers. We are going to be revealing all in a special episode next week, and it's worth tuning in for. I can definitely say that.
Yeah, it's an absolute first on the podcast. Never been done before. It's the biggest thing we've ever done. I know you've heard us say these things before, but it is. We just keep leveling up at the moment, and this is bonkers exciting. So set your alarm clocks for 7 a.m. on Thursday next week, when the podcast will come out, so you can hear straight away what is happening. But it's a game changer. It's absolutely changing everything, for us at least, and potentially you as well.
Ooh, mysterious. Okay, well, as we can't say anything more about that, let's get on to our main topic this week, which is our market update for April, covering what's happened over the last month in property and in the economy in general. There was so much in the last month. This could have been double the length. We've gone through and quite aggressively cut out topics that we could have covered. We sort of go through and like put in everything and then cut it back down again. And we had to be quite harsh because otherwise this would be a 2-hour pod. For whatever reason, it's been a very, very busy month. So let's get into it. We're going to be covering, as always, the property market, the rental market. We're going to be talking about cladding again. We'll be talking about new legislation affecting landlords. But we'll start with what should have been or could have been the big event of the last month, but turned out to be a bit of a nothing. But Rob, we're always quite happy when this particular event is a nothing because it means that nothing bad's happened. And I'm talking about the spring statement. Struggling what to actually say about the spring statement now, because it appears that it was literally a statement. Nothing really happened off the back of it at all.
Yeah, the big headlines were around fuel duty, which, you know, is nice that it's come down, but it's not game changer. It's not suddenly, wow, everyone's personal finances have changed for the better or worse off the back of that. There was a pledge to cut basic rate of income tax in the future. Sounds cynical, but not all pledges by politicians are delivered upon. So we'll see if that happens. But it's kind of a bit of a red herring anyway, because proposing a tax cut sounds nice, but actually there was a load of tax rises over the last couple of years, delivered in one form or another. So actually, as a government right now, it's classed as a high tax government. If you look back to the amount we're taxed as individuals, it's at the highest rate for decades in terms of a percentage of our income through the various taxes that we have to pay. I'm not saying that's a good or a bad thing. Obviously, most people don't like taxes, but we have lots of things to pay for, like all the debt and the NHS. But talking of debt, one of the things the government have highlighted is their forecasts of inflation. And we know that governments are going to struggle to pay back all the debt they owe out. And maybe inflation is one way of them eroding that debt over time. And the annual rate for inflation in February was at 6.2%. It's not getting the headlines I think it should. I mean, understandably, there's a lot going on in the world. But if there wasn't wars going on in the world and there wasn't COVID taking place, I think we'd all be talking about inflation a lot more, because 6.2% is huge. It's been a long time since it's that high. But the government has said that they expect it to peak at 8.7% during some point this year. Now, that's a big, big number. So, Rob, we've been threatening to do an episode on inflation for a while, and we just penciled it in for June because it's a big topic and we've got lots to be talking about over the next couple of months. But inflation has got to be one of those things we talk about more, because it's impacting us all, whether we like it or not.
It is. And I really wish we could talk about it now, because I've got a lot to say on this subject, but I'm going to hold myself back because we do have a lot else to cover. But we don't need to stray further than the Bank of England, because, Rob, something truly spooky is happening, and it relates to the 18-year property cycle. When we talk about the property cycle, something that we mention pretty much every time is how lenders react to changes over the duration of the cycle. So when there's been a recent crash, of course, they're very cautious. They bring in lots of measures to make sure that whatever has happened never happens again. But then as the cycle progresses, those very sensible ideas start to feel like a bit of a constraint. They're confident everything's going well, prices are going up, and anything that stands in the way of banks being able to do more business and make a profit out of that boom starts to feel a little bit inconvenient. Like, well, do we really need to be doing this? Well, we've talked over recent months about how the property boom is finally here. And Rob, right on cue, a consultation has been published about removing one of the main constraints that was put in place after the last crash.
Rob, you say it's spooky, and it is. It's just bizarre. It's almost worrying how this is playing out. As the 18-year property cycle kind of predicts, and we've been talking about for many years now, and we've said, well, if you follow the 18-year property cycle and look at history, these things will play out. But so much of it is coming true. It's just like, oh dear. Part of your hopes it doesn't come true, because it's like, surely they'll learn the lessons. Not again. They won't do it again, right? But it looks like it's going that way, because the consultation is to look at loosening the affordability tests around mortgage lending. At the moment, you're restricted both through your owner-occupier mortgage and buy-to-let mortgage on how much you can borrow, depending on your income, if it's your own home, or the rental levels, if it's a buy-to-let. The consultation, and it's worth saying it's just a consultation at this point, is looking at removing that. And that consultation closes in May. But the fact that they're even discussing it, Rob, suggests that they're seriously considering it. And if they are seriously considering it, then this is just one of those final breaks that are left to stop the market really kicking on and booming, being removed. And this won't make big news, but it is big news if it happens, because it will change everything around lending. Lending and how easy it was to acquire debt last time round was one of the main drivers behind the property boom last time, and also ultimately part of its downfall. I'm really surprised that it's even being discussed, Rob. And even though we've predicted it and said this is something that'll happen and play out, I still can't quite believe it will happen. I guess we'll see, right?
Yeah, I know. It's going to be very interesting. But I mean, consultation is normally something that you do to provide justification for something that you want to do anyway. So I'd be very surprised if it doesn't end up happening. But I think this is super significant. It sounds technical, but at risk of kind of spoiling something that we're going to say in an episode that's coming out in a couple of weeks that we've actually already recorded, which is about the 18-year property cycle. So stick around for the rest of April because we've got some great episodes coming up this month. But one of the things that we say is we believe that the cycle has got a fair bit further to go. And part of the reason why we're not in the end game yet is you can't have the real madness of everyone getting carried away and outbidding each other and that real bubble part of the phase without lending standards being a lot looser and banks being in the mood to just shovel money out the door, which at the moment they're not. I mean, there is a good range of mortgages around, but it's absolutely nothing like it was at the end of the last cycle. This change isn't going to take us back there, but it is, if it happens, going to make a big difference because it suddenly means that everyone can borrow a lot more, which means banks can do more business. They can say yes to people they otherwise would have said no to. And if people are able to pay more, they of course will pay more, which will push up property prices. And so it goes. So this seems like the most boring and technical story that we're going to cover this week, but it has the potential to be by far the most impactful. So one to keep an eye on.
Yeah, and of course, we will keep you updated. We'll have our eagle eyes on this. And if any announcements are made, then we will, of course, let you know and let you know the implications of any announcements. But staying with the Bank of England, and thank you, Bank of England, you've given us lots of talking points this month. The Bank of England have increased interest rates. You may have missed that, but then again, if you've got a mortgage and it's a variable, you probably haven't. Interest rates have gone up for a third time in 4 months. From 0.5% to 0.75%. Now, at the time, I said this one caught me off guard, and it really did. I didn't expect it to rise again so quickly. But I think, Rob, we have to put things into perspective because interest rates now are at the same level as March 2020, which isn't that long ago. And actually, when you really think about it, interest rates of 0.75 is still ridiculously low. I think it's just we're almost got used to interest rates being close to zero that was like, oh, wow, 0.75, that's high, but it really isn't. It's super, super low.
I know, it's not exactly the 1970s, is it? Inflation is at whatever you said it was, like some crazy high number, and it's going to peak even higher. And they're messing around debating whether to put it up by a quarter of a percent, and it wasn't even a unanimous vote. I mean, it's just, I'm about to go off onto a rant, but I just don't think they're serious about doing anything about this at all. Do you know the Bank of England governor gets paid £500,000 a year? I think for £500,000, I could turn up and fiddle around by a quarter of a percent once every couple of months. I'm going to stop, but we will talk about inflation and related topics a lot more in the next couple of months because it's such a hot topic. And yeah, the rise in interest rates is surprising only because of their recent reluctance to do anything whatsoever. In terms of mortgage rates, it's pushed them up slightly, but that had already happened before the announcement because it was widely anticipated. So not a big deal in itself, but will they keep going? And most importantly, will my prediction that interest rates will stay below 1% by the end of this year come true? Well, we'll just have to wait and find out.
So we can't do a market update without updating you on house prices. And thankfully, Zoopla have just released their data for February. This was published on March 29th. So it's pretty much the latest data that we could get our hands on. And according to Zoopla, home prices rose by 8.1% in the year to February, taking the average value of a home to £245,200. Now, we've seen lots of numbers ranging from sort of the 8% into double-digit territory. So this number doesn't come as a shock. You know, a few years ago, if we were talking about 8% growth, we probably would have done a whole podcast on it because 8% would have been seen as huge growth. But a bit like getting used to interest rates being low, I feel like we're starting to get used to property prices raging on and pushing on at great speed. Of course, they do their standard looking at all the cities as well, which is part of the home track, the Zoopla own a home track, and Liverpool remains number one with growth at just over 10%. Nottingham not far behind at second, Manchester third, Leicester at fourth, didn't see that one coming, and Bournemouth, love Bournemouth, at five. And actually, of the top 20 cities, the top 17 are all above 5%. So even Newcastle down on 17th is 5.4%. So everywhere's seeing growth at the moment. And Rob, can't see that changing anytime soon, especially with all the activity in the market right now.
No, exactly. And here's the thing that caught my eye from this. It actually publishes the total house price growth over the last 5 years, which is on average for the UK, 21.5%. So if you work that out, that's 4.3% a year, which is really not high at all, especially when you consider that about 10% of that 21.5% was last year. So it kind of goes to show how unimpressive property prices have been over the last 5 years, kind of ever since we started podcasting, really. House prices just haven't done anything that dramatic. So now you're seeing these 8%. It feels really dramatic. But really, I think it's just because we've been lulled into all these years of like sort of 2-4% growth if it's an exciting year. So no, don't see anything changing too soon. And as I hinted earlier, we have got an episode coming up in a couple of weeks' time about the 18-year property cycle that talks about all this and more. And that is not one that you'll want to miss. We've also got a minor story of interest that caught my eye on the property market, which is around the proportion of sales that are happening off plan at the moment. And at the moment, that number is 37%. And what I thought was interesting around this was, if you look back, the peak of homes being sold off plan was in 2008, when it was 69%. So a heck of a lot higher. I think this might be an interesting one to keep an eye on, because as the property cycle continues and people start getting more excited about property again and competition returns, you'd expect to see more off plan sales. And seeing how that number progresses from its current 37%, getting to, as it creeps up towards its peak of 69%, it could be an interesting indicator to keep an eye on of just how much further the market has got to go. So always nice to have more data points around house prices, because that's something that we're very interested in. But Rob, the rental market we're pretty interested in as well. And there's been lots of interesting news around that over the last month.
There certainly has. And let's start with London, because London has really seen a transformation when it comes to rentals over the last 12-ish months, because at one point, and it didn't feel that long ago, I remember even you talking about it, Rob, how you were able to get yourself an incredible deal for a rental in London. And I know recently you've moved and you've not been able to get an incredible deal. I'm sure you got a good deal, knowing you, but it was a lot harder to get a deal. And it's easy to see why now the data's coming through, because rental demand in the capital is shooting right up. Depends on where you're looking, of course, because some areas will be more popular than others, but Redbridge up 12% in demand, Barking and Dagenham up 11%, Hounslow up 11%. So the demand is up. And then when demand is up, well, you'd expect rental prices to go up as well. And in another story, we see that the annualized rental rise in Greater London is at 27.3%, which has helped push the UK total to over 10%. But London driving a lot of that. And it may sound that London's gone bonkers, and you could argue possibly it has. But I think, Rob, because it went so far the other way, it's just bounced back really aggressively. We've seen this with London before with property prices. After 08, London crashed, but it bounced back really, really quickly at a great speed, because I think people forget that it's one of the most famous cities in the world. It's a world-famous city. And you can say all you want about cities being dead, but London won't be dead. It's a world-famous city, and that's not going to change anytime soon. You know, you can't take that brand away from it. It's like New York, Rome, Sydney, and many others. It's not going to suddenly become unfashionable. So if there was a short-term blip in value, that value's disappeared now, and London is going great guns. But I think you know better than most.
Yeah, I do, regrettably, because I was not able to get a good deal this time around. And because I've been in the process of looking, I went and looked at a lot of different places and spoke to a lot of agents. And something that's very clearly happening right now is that there have been lots of people who got into places on kind of like COVID specials and went in on like a one-year agreement at a really low rent because they were struggling to get anyone else in. And those people are now not having their tenancies renewed and are getting moved on because the landlord wants to charge what the market rent now is, which is significantly higher. So I think one of the reasons that growth in London is so high is that in London particularly, there were a lot of people getting unusually, ridiculously good deals for a period of time. Those are now ending and rents have normalized. So I think that massive growth in rents is a one-off as a result of that effect. But of course, I agree with everything that you've said about why I believe London will continue to do well. And it'll be interesting to see if London rents do continue to perform strongly, because frankly, they need to in order for London prices to grow, because actual London property values have got so stretched relative to rents over the last sort of, well, 7 years or so, I suppose. But it will be interesting to see if London rents do continue to perform strongly, because if there's going to be any growth in London actual capital values of property over the rest of this cycle, then it needs to, because prices got so stretched relative to rents. So very interesting one to keep an eye on over the next little while as an indicator for what London might have in store in terms of property prices over the rest of this cycle.
And related to this, an interesting story that grabbed my attention from the Sunday Times, and this article is by Melissa York, looks at buy-to-let activity with landlords. And the story goes on to say that there are more buy-to-let sales happening this year than last year. 13.8% of purchases in January and February were buy-to-lets, up from 12.5% in 2021. So the question is asked, why is there a shortage of rental properties? Because that's one of the things that are driving up rental prices right now, is a lack of supply. But if there's more sales, why isn't that turning into more stock? Well, it's interesting because it turns out a record 41% of those landlords' purchases had previously been let. So landlords are buying from landlords. And there's a few reasons for this. One, it may have a proven track record as a rental. Two, the type of properties that they're going for work as buy-to-lets. They're in an area that would be attractive to a landlord. So therefore, there are more landlords likely to sell to them in those areas because they've been attracted for the same reasons. But also, the article talks about the new EPC requirements as well, and that a landlord is more likely to buy possibly more energy-efficient property, maybe a new-build property, like an apartment in a city centre, rather than a Victorian terrace. Because with the EPC rules, it's difficult to make it energy efficient enough to meet the new rules. And if you want to meet the rules, then it could end up being expensive to upgrade it to the level required. So while there's more activity, it's not creating more rentals. And Capital Economics have said, and I don't ever believe the number because it just seems so ridiculously high, that we'll need 227,000 new private lets a year to meet government targets. Now, that might be true. I don't think we necessarily need that many new rental homes every year on top of what we already have. But even if it's half that number, we're not getting anywhere close at the moment. Even with the PRS industry and all the rental homes they're bringing into the market, still isn't anywhere near that level. And that number is for a year. Each and every year, we're going to need that level, apparently. So if that is the case, and as you can probably tell from my tone, I am a little skeptical of the size of that number, then it's only going to continue to put upward pressure on rental prices, at least in the short to medium term. We'll see, because it's not the only factor. It depends where the rentals properties are delivered, because some areas need them more than others. But overall, it was quite an interesting story to read that the transactions that are taking place are between landlords and not necessarily creating new rentals for the market. So quite a bit of news on rentals this month, but it's been an interesting month. And that also applies to cladding, Rob. Cladding doesn't sound exciting, but it impacts a lot of landlords, and it isn't a really important issue that a lot of people are frustrated by. So there seems to be a bit of movement on that as well.
There does, and got to be cautious about this because it seems like there's been movement lots of times in the past. The amount that is said around this topic as a proportion of what's actually done or actual firm policy rather than just things that they intend to do, there's more of a discrepancy than in any other subject I can think of. But apparently the government is now close to a deal with house builders to make house builders pay for blocks affected by fire safety issues going back 30 years. And that's going to be for buildings that are above 11 metres in height. So that's close to a deal. Doesn't mean it's happened. But hopefully by the time we do our next market update, we can tell you that a deal has been done. The other interesting thing that's been bubbling away with the cladding issue is the concept that buy-to-let landlords will have to pay for the replacement of cladding that owner-occupiers or accidental landlords will not need to pay for. In other words, in situations where the developer can't be made to pay, the government will pay, but will only pay for owner-occupiers, not for landlords. And this, quite understandably, got everyone very upset. And this is another one where nothing has actually changed, nothing has been announced, but a committee of MPs has said that they consider this to be unfair. So the Levelling Up Housing and Communities Select Committee, which has got a very catchy name, said the buy-to-let landlords are no more to blame than other leaseholders for historic building safety defects, and landing them with potentially unaffordable bills will only slow down or prevent works to make buildings safe. Which I think is absolutely right. It kind of feels like it's a bit of a political point to exclude landlords, but the impact of that could be that the repairs that are needed don't get made at all because you have to go and try and collect from a load of people who will be either unable or unwilling to pay before you can get the work started. So that's not a reversal, but it's a step closer to a reversal. So again, hopefully by next month, there'll be more to say on that.
And hopefully more to say soon on this next story, because the plans have been revealed to speed up possessions for landlords 4 years after the consultation. Yes, you heard correctly, 4 years. So back in November 2018, it was revealed in a report that basically it took too long to get possession of a property using a Section 21 notice, and that needed addressing. Well, 4 years on, the government has promised to set out how it will improve the possession process. So it hasn't happened yet, but they made a promise that it will happen. And Rob, as we're optimists, but also skeptics at the same time, you can decide to look at this story whatever way you want. You could say, well, at least it's progress and they've indicated they want to do something. Or you could say, not a lot's really happened other than a promise 4 years on.
Well, as he pointed out earlier and shook me to my very core, not all government promises get kept. So I'll remain sceptical on that one for now. Here's another headline that a lot of people will be surprised by. And it's simultaneously a very surprising headline because it's not one you're used to seeing, but also kind of entirely uncontroversial. The headline is, vast majority of tenants satisfied with renting. Who would have thought it? My goodness, not all landlords are terrible. Some tenants are happy. I just don't know what to do with this information. But I thought this is really interesting because it's from a survey by the Social Market Foundation that said that 81% of tenants are happy with their current property and 85% are happy with their landlord. But what I thought was interesting is that they split out satisfaction with the property and the landlord from satisfaction with being a tenant in general. And a much higher proportion were dissatisfied with the status of being a renter. And I think that's something that often gets missed when you see these stories that seem to come out every week about how horribly unhappy everyone who rents is. I think it may be the fact that a lot of them would actually like to own and they would prefer to own. And therefore, if you word the question in a certain way, they'll show up as being unhappy. But that doesn't mean that all rental properties are terrible or that all landlords are terrible, because as this study seems to show, not the case.
I wonder if The Guardian reported on this news story. We'll see. Not all landlords are evil. Who would have thought? Well, on that bombshell, I think we can wrap up the news and excitedly talk about Hub Extra. Because, Rob, some people might say we like hoovering up a good deal in property. But this week, there's no vacuum when it comes to offering a good resource. We've got a great recommendation.
I'm sure listeners can almost hear me shaking my head. I said before we started that I wanted to talk about my new robot vacuum cleaner, but it turns out that you've got one as well, so we can properly geek out on this. I thought these were stupid. I thought a robot vacuum was a bit of a gimmick and you didn't need it. But we moved to somewhere that has got like solid wood floors rather than carpet in most rooms. And it's also got lovely floor-to-ceiling windows. And the sun shines through in the morning and it's great, except that when it does so, it shows up every last bit of dirt on the floor, which is really annoying. So we got a robot vacuum and it's amazing. It vacuums, it mops, it does carpets, it does solid floors. And I pop it on when I go out, come back, and the place looks great. And it's been an absolute revelation. I thought it was the height of laziness, and it probably is, but it's been awesome. But clearly you were aware of this before I was.
Yeah, I've had one a few months now, and it's been great. What surprised me is how cost-effective they are. For some reason, I had just assumed that they'd be really, really expensive. But I picked mine up on Amazon for less than £200 after reading a few reviews, and it's really, really good. Mine does the cleaning. It does have an option to do the mopping up, which I've not tried yet, so you'll have to let me know how effective that is. But as just a vacuum cleaner, it's brilliant. It works. I was skeptical. I didn't think it would work well. I thought, you know, it either wouldn't vacuum up well or would just get stuck a lot or just be a bit rubbish, really, more of a gimmick. But it's actually really, really good. What I'm curious about, though, Rob, is have you named yours?
No, we did have this discussion. My toddler started just referring it to it as the robot, and we decided to just call it the robot as well, and that's kind of stuck. Has yours got a name?
It has. My brother lives on the other side of the world, and he doesn't listen to this podcast, so I can't say. So because we don't get to see it very often, we named it after him. So we call my vacuum cleaner Ken. So
that's a brilliant vacuum name, even if that wasn't your brother's name. I love that.
And my children get to see Ken a lot now, so it's great.
Well, if he didn't want a vacuum named after him, he should have listened to the podcast. That's the lesson from this one. That is us done for this week. Thank you for joining us. What a bumper week it's been, even without a bit of vacuum chat at the end. If you particularly enjoyed it, let us know. We'll do a whole episode of our cleaning routines. We won't do that. That'd be terrible. But that is us done for this week. And let us know what you thought. You can find us on all the socials at Property Hub UK. Love to hear from you. And remember, you can learn more about the Portfolio app at portfolio.co.uk. And Rob, next week, very special,
It is very special. So I hope you've already set your alarm clocks for 7 a.m. on Thursday morning to hear the big, big news. And I promise you, it's worth it. You can really tell me off if you don't think it is. But it's going to be an amazing episode because we have amazing news. It's been a long time coming, this, but we can finally deliver on the announcements next Thursday. And it's something that we can do together. Yep, you can do something together with Rob and I. I'll leave it at that. Hopefully I've not given it away, but I'm sure you've got a few guesses already of what we're going to be talking about. But make sure you join us on Thursday to find out exactly what it is and how we could do something together. Take care. Have fun. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.